Yankees Files Podcast. We're back. I'm Will Harris. You're Alec Whipple. And the rest of you are fans of a team that has not lost a series in 2023. The New York Yankees. They finished off a series win against Baltimore today with a two-home run performance from Aaron Judge, who you may not be aware of this, but you ought to be at this point. He's pretty good. So in case that wasn't on your radar, should be now. Franchi Cordero has become a generational player because obviously Picota has the Yankees projected to win the most games of any team in baseball. They have the best World Series odds. I love what I'm seeing out of this team to this point, Whipple. And I know there have been some injuries and some additional injuries, but man, when the cavalry comes and this team is playing as well as they are, I mean, the sky's the limit. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. You can't be upset if you win two of every three games. That's a pretty good season. That's
right.
108 wins and a likely division title, unless the Rays go 162-0. But, you know, well, I'm pretty sure they're not going to be playing the three literal worst teams in baseball for the rest of the year. So, I would like,
yeah, forgive me for not being concerned about that specific outcome.
Right, like, just diverting to the Rays, I think it's reasonable to say, you know, you got to beat the good teams and the bad teams. I get that, but like, this is a level below the bad teams. This is like the worst teams, probably worse than like the average worst teams in any given year. So forgive us for not being impressed.
The Rays have not yet played a team that is actually trying to win games. Like, that's how bad it's been.
It's been bad, but you know what? The Yankees have played some teams that are trying to be very competitive this year, and they've looked really good. Like, I don't know your thought, but one of the things I've been interested in, or that I saw today, is this is their best start, tied for their best start since 2010, which kind of feels like, yeah, that makes sense. The Yankees usually, like, get off to a terrible, like, first 10 or so games and then turn it on. So it's good to see them starting off stronger than usual. But even last year, like, when they were lighting it up at the beginning of the year, like, that team had everything going. Something about this team, like, feels, I don't know, like, more sustainable. Like, not better, but I feel like there's more depth there. I feel like I'm more confident in the guys who are performing and the guys, you know, there haven't been a lot of guys who have gotten off to horrific starts. I feel like that's probably where this is coming from. Like, the bar has been set very high. There haven't been any of the, oh, this game is just going to be written off because the Yankees forgot how to hit. There was one game against the Phillies. Even in that game, they brought the tying run to the plate. But they've been competitive in all these.
The Yankees have done no worse than bringing the tying run to the plate in all three of their losses.
Right.
So it's like, not even
great
credible.
Way to start.
Yeah, it's not even credible to say they've played a non-competitive loss yet, even though we've already gotten the complaints about punt lineups and, you know, whatever else.
Yeah, I think my takeaway is that this all feels sustainable and it feels like they have another level to go. Like, they don't I think we know this is like our third year of the post-COVID built on pitching Yankees. And we know, you know, 2021 was just a horrific start. 2022, I think, was a really good start, you know, a great lighting it up for the first few months. But we kind of settled into like where we know this team is. Like, they're playing at a very high level. They don't have all their players, but at the same time, it doesn't feel unsustainable in the way that, like, at certain times last year it might have. That, and I know it's early to say that. This just feels like it feels right. It feels like this team is doing exactly what we've all said it has the potential to do. And yeah, Giants, Phillies, Orioles, like, that's a pretty challenging beginning of the schedule, and they've looked good. I mean, just very satisfied. I think that's the best way to say it.
Yeah, they absolutely have. So, you know, the Phillies series by this point was a little while back. But man, the Yankees just played well. You're right, they did have a game in which they didn't hit, but, you know, they got out, they won the first game 8-1, which was phenomenal. It was after they had just played a laugher with the Giants, that game that went 6-0. You know, you had Glaber with an opposite field home run off Taijuan Walker. You had really a reasonable amount of damage done, all of it off of Taiwan Walker. You had a Franchi Cordero double, a Rizzo home run, you know, Trevi got in on the action, and you had one of a couple now just sparklers from Nestor Cortez to start the season. You know, having a short spring training, the injury concerns, all of that, nothing really appears to have bothered him. Then, you know, they followed that up with the 4-1 loss to weirdly like Matt Strom and a unusual cohort of relievers, as they tend to do. They made some noise against Craig Kimbrell, but, you know, nobody did all that much except for a solo home run off the bat of DJ LeMahieu, only four hits, which was, you know, not impressive, just the one extra base hit, only one plate appearance for the team with runners in scoring position. Domingo Herman wasn't good, which I said on Twitter wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world if Domingo Herman just isn't good. I think we've all been kind of bracing ourselves for Domingo Herman not being good for a while. And then they got out to an early lead off the back of a couple RBI singles by Gleyber Torres in the final game against Philly. And despite a little bit of a rally, including by friend of the program, Jake Cave from the Phillies, at the end of Cole's start, a Trevino homer off Aaron Nola gave the Yankees the insurance they needed. It made a Kyle Schwarber home run off Loaisiga not matter. And just like that, they take 2-3 from the defending National League champs. I would call that a pretty good series, Whipple. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, you covered the basics, but it was some good all-around efforts. And I think the Wednesday game, the game against Nola, really impressed me. Kind of the same way opening day did.
Absolutely.
Because, like, yeah, you're going to – this team is talented. It's going to beat up on the Taiwan Walkers of the world, and it's going to have those laughers. Like, they had those last year. They had those – maybe not in 2021, but we're not going to speak of that year ever again, hopefully. But, like, a normal hitting Yankees team will have their laughers. But what I was really impressed on opening day, and what I was impressed on about from the Wednesday game, is that they – took advantage of early opportunities. And, you know, it's really hard to score runs off of good pitchers, and they were able to do that. Gerrit Cole, you know, absolutely crushing it. But, you know, the fact that they were able to score some early runs, tack on some insurance, and, you know, win the 4-1 game, I mean, it is part and thanks to Gerrit Cole. And, you know, we could talk more about him, but it just in terms of the team in general, like, really good teams — really good teams are not really good teams because they win every game 10-0. They're really good teams because they take advantage of the opportunities that are given. Sometimes a lot more opportunities present themselves, but sometimes you have the situation like in the first inning of the game against Nola, where you had Gleyber Torres, you know, basically put them ahead. I forget in that specific situation, but I thought, didn't Judge steal a base there? Or
Judge has been stealing lots of bases.
I'd have to look up, but
I'll check on the play-by-play for you.
Yeah, so whatever the situation was, Gleyber Torres came through with two outs, runners in scoring position, and, you know, it was only an RBI single. Like, it was, you know, it's only one run, but that's all you need sometimes. Like, that's what you have to do in those moments against good pitchers. And the Yankees tacked on their runs later with the home run, but I've just been really impressed by those moments where, you know, we saw it again. We'll talk about the Baltimore games, but we saw it again, a two-out rally started by Hicks, you know, coming through.
Yep.
I mean, not much praise we can give to Aaron Hicks, but up and down the team,
certainly not,
they've been taking advantage of those moments. I think that really impressed me, and that's won them some games so far. Like, if in that Philly game against Nola, if, you know, the score had been tied 1-1, or they had been down going into the later innings, like, you don't know what's going to happen. Could be a completely different game. So I think just taking advantage of those early opportunities, you know the pitching's going to be there. This team always has pitched for the last few years. And I think the difference is, you know, the guys like Gleyber, like, coming through — I'll just say Gleyber himself, because he's been doing it half the time — coming through in those spots and making the good pitchers suffer for the rare occasions that they falter. And that's been the difference. I mean, that's why, you know, the Yankees have won a few of those closer games.
Yeah, the rare occasions that they barely falter. That is a Phillies pitching joke. So let's take a second to talk about Gleyber Torres. I think everyone knows about Aaron Judge, who is hitting 364, 436, 758 for a 221 WRC plus. And he is first in Fangraphs WAR on the Yankees with 0.7 through just nine games, which is pretty good. Gleyber Torres is right up there with him. He's hitting 357, 514, 607 for a 217 WRC plus. He has 0.5 Fangraphs WAR. He's been holding it down defensively. He's been walking nearly a quarter of the time, which I saw when he took his ninth walk of the season yesterday. I saw a stat from Mike Axisa that Gleyber didn't walk for the ninth time until early June last year. So the plate discipline's there. He's making good swing decisions. He's slugging. I just love everything I'm seeing from Gleyber Torres. You know, he's hit a ball at least 100 miles an hour in all but two games. He's hit a ball at least 98 miles an hour in every game. Like, you just gotta be excited about what he's putting forth. You know, the exit velo is there. He's hitting line drives. He's barreling balls. He's hitting home runs. He's getting extra base hits. Hell, he's leading the Yankees in stolen bases.
That is crazy. For that part,
for
especially
a guy who, yeah, he's five steals this year already. For a guy whose roster status felt very tenuous for much of spring, for a guy who has been the subject of trade rumors for the past, you know, almost year, I guess, for a guy who a lot of people gave up on after 2020 and 2021, never me, of course, because I was always right about Gleyber Torres, as I went on a little victory tour on Twitter. It's just so great to see. It's almost like, and now the lows never got as low for Torres as they did for Hicks, but it's almost like the anti-Aaron Hicks in the way that Gleyber has handled this. There were people calling for his job. There were people calling for him to be traded. There were people blaming him for stunting Anthony Volpe's development and not letting him progress, you know, excuse me, to the major leagues, because there was a glut of infielders. You know, all of the things, there are people who call him lazy, people who say he doesn't hustle, people who say he's immature, people who say he doesn't play baseball intelligently. Like, I can't think of a better way for him to shut those people up than to start the season the way he has. And I am in our mentions on Twitter, and I know that some people have just decided their opinion on Gleyber Torres and are stuck in it, but you can't concern yourself with the opinion of someone who isn't going to change, isn't going to be willing to change their mind based on new data. And the new data Gleyber is providing is pretty damn good.
Yeah, I mean, Gleyber, kind of like your other favorite player, is just a guy, like, narratives are getting built around him almost daily. I mean, it's been that way for his whole career. Like, the whole 2021 shortstop struggling aspect is almost ridiculous when you remember that in 2019 he was also playing shortstop and had a good year. Like,
and he hit 38 home runs.
Right. Or like his last August slump, because he almost got traded and then got flustered about it. Like, I mean, everybody struggled last August except for Aaron Judge. Like, he was just the guy who everyone happened to target. It's laughable that people just pick people and go after them. And with Gleyber, like, it's never, there have been times where he has offensively looked lost, but if you've looked at his performance since like mid 2021, he has been in a different offensive environment just as good as he was pre 2020. And I think people are acting like this is new, you know, but even last year, like, I think the most frustrating thing for me, I'm a Gleyber Torres fan. I don't carry the Gleyber Torres bandwagon like you do, but the thing I always get annoyed about is when people say he didn't have a good 2022, because that is just
ridiculous.
Not true. It's not
true. It's so false.
It's like, 1 month does not make a season. And I get it dragged his numbers down, but he still had really good numbers and was legitimately great in 5 months of the season.
Gleyber Torres had a 138 WRC plus from August 15th to the end of the year, by the way.
Right.
Just because people want to forget that.
Right. The narrative, that's not the narrative.
Just want to point that out. Yep, of course, yeah.
Like, I don't know how his numbers are going to end up this year. I'm guessing they're going to be, you know, maybe not the juice ball levels, but probably a whole lot better than he's done. And, you know, last year, definitely the year before. And he's 26. I mean, that's logical. Like, he's a young player still, and guys can level up at 26. We might be seeing the best version of Gleyber Torres, and that's a really cool thing to think about. I think some of the, you know, the walk decisions, like, absolutely, the swing decisions, the walk rate, absolutely think that could stick. I think watching him swing and going opposite field, and we know a healthy Gleyber Torres is one who can go and probably prefers to stay back and go the opposite field. So all of these things are good signs. I think people who are, you know, building a narrative are just trying to hate on someone because they don't like him, and that kind of sucks.
The rest of season steamer projection has Gleyber hitting for a 123 WRC plus over a remaining sample of 127 games and accruing 3.4 Fangraphs WAR, which would make him basically a 4 WAR player for the season, which would be phenomenal. At the second base position, there's basically no one who's going to be beating that.
Right. Let's not use 2019 as a baseline, because if you offensively adjust those numbers, it's going to be about the same. And
it would be a more valuable season by Fangraphs WAR than 2019 was.
Right. So I get that's implanted in people's mind, but I think we got to move past that.
Also, like, I'm not sold that Gleyber Torres isn't hitting 30 home runs this year. Like, very clear. So Gleyber carried the Yankees, for much of this first stretch of the season. When they arrived in Baltimore and Clark Schmidt had to take the mound, things didn't go great. He really didn't have great control for a guy who is best when he doesn't walk anyone. He was getting into a lot of three ball counts. He walked three guys in 3 1/3 innings. All the contact that he allowed was insanely hard. You know, there were, I saw, I believe it was Marley Rivera or maybe Katie Sharp tweeted that basically, like, minimum 13 batted balls, which is what he allowed. He had like the fifth or sixth highest hard contact rate allowed, of any starting pitcher in the StatCast era. So that wasn't good. The Yankees made a couple of rallies in this game. They were down 4-0, and then a combination of Franchy Cordero and Oswaldo Cabrera put them up 5-4. But then thorns in my side, Adley Rutschman and Jorge Mateo started a little rally to tie it. Luis Urias, Ryan Mountcastle ultimately put the Orioles ahead, assisted by some wild pitches from Jimmy Cordero, and ultimately a rally against Cionel Pérez was stifled with some wrist failure, highlighted really by Jose Trevino hitting into a double play. And I think people probably made too much of the IKF being allowed to hit with two outs and a runner on second and then later third. And then a Judge walk, steal, and advance on a wild pitch in the ninth was erased by a Rizzo flyout with two outs. So look, you know, again, the Yankees had the tying run on base. They did not really use their star pitching staff by any means in that game. You know, it was Schmidt, Hamilton, Marinaccio, Cordero, and Wandy. And they were within a run. They didn't pitch well. And in order to lose a game in which you score 6 runs, you have to pitch poorly. And that's what happened. And that's going to happen sometimes. And they bounced back nicely in the last couple days. We saw on Saturday, Giancarlo Stanton ripped a ball a veritable FU to the Orioles for moving the wall back because it really doesn't affect him. Anthony Volpe got his first major league extra base hit with a triple off the wall and right. Johnny Brito turned in another really nice start to start off his career. Mike King, Wandy, and Holmes were basically perfect. They only allowed one run and struck out six between the three, or only allowed one hit, rather, no runs, and struck out six between the three of them. You know, DJ LeMahieu had a double. Aaron Judge had a double. The Yankee, or that may have been counted as an error, but the Yankees looked really good. And they followed it up with a strong performance today on Sunday. Judge homered twice. Franchi homered because that's what he does now. And in spite of a couple hiccups, you know, Nestor putting some guys on and then Abreu allowing that RBI double to Santander and Jimmy Cordero allowing a homer to Rutschman. You know, both of those happened with multi-run leads. The Orioles never got closer than two once it was 4-0. And the Yankees finished off another series win, this time on the road. And they head to Cleveland now to continue this road trip at 6-3. Second in the AL East, playing some really good baseball.
Yeah, first in the AL East among non-clown teams playing actual games.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, I'm going to mention that three more times today because that just...
Like, you should.
No, it's, you know, this team has been, like I said, they've been mechanical in some games. I think, like, they haven't... seem, you know, there have been some close games, but they've taken care of business when they've needed to. And, you know, I think we're going to go on to talk about specific guys we've been impressed with, but just again, in general, like, they'll drop the first game in Baltimore, tough back and forth affair, and they went and handled business in the next two games. Like, that's what you need to do over a long season, and that's almost like the baseline of what this team needs to do to be, you know, considered one of the title favorites. But, you know, Baltimore's a good team. Like, they, you know, as you probably saw, like, this isn't your father's Orioles. This isn't like your slightly older brother's Orioles.
My childhood's Orioles.
Yeah. The Orioles have been a weird combination of like good and bad in the last like 15 years. So
I think what is true is that like the Orioles can hit.
Yeah.
And their lineup is pesky. But it's absolutely not a concern of mine that the Orioles can pitch well enough to really be a competitive team. And I think it's a shame. So I was at the game that the Yankees lost on Friday. And it was electric. Like, the people in Baltimore are excited about this team. And like, I caught an FU as I was walking to my seat. I, you know, was kind of getting made fun of, teased, discussed with by the Orioles fans who were sitting around me, many of whom were very pleasant. Almost everyone was. But, like, this is a fan base that's really excited about its team. And it was honestly disappointing to see that, given that, like, the Orioles aren't going to pitch well this year. They may not quite have the lineup depth to really kind of make noise, but even if like they have a 70th or 80th percentile outcome for their offense, which would be like the offense being pretty darn good, the pitching just isn't there. They didn't make the investment they need to make in pitching. You know, bringing in, who was it, like Cole Irvin Kyle Gibson or whoever they ended up getting. It's just not competitive. Frankly, there's a world in which they're best off trading Felix Bautista and Cionel Perez at the deadline as they did with Jorge Lopez. Because like they do have a good young core. Like Gunnar Henderson, man, he's fun to watch. Adley Rutschman, already a massive thorn in our side. The Yankees could not get him out in this series. I know that people are very excited about Grayson Rodriguez, who has just come up. I know that DL Hall is, you know, still has some believers and certainly should. And they still have a very strong minor league system. But man, like, this team just isn't going to prevent runs well enough to be competitive. And I honestly feel like they're letting their fans down. Like, I was at that game. It was electric. People were pumped. They were getting the Yankees suck chant going. They were doing Let's Go O's. They were doing like the Seven Nation Army thing. People are really, really pumped for that team. And it was honestly nice to go to a divisional game and feel like I was in enemy territory, because I used to walk into Camden Yards and feel like I own the place. And I think it's great for the city. I think it's great for the young core that they're building, but I'm not sold that the Orioles are really built to contend this year, but I'm happy that there's, like, you know, positivity around this and drive towards them being a competitive team again. And it was, you know, I think I have to address the elephant in the room, which is I had only seen Yankees victories from 2014 to 2022, and this was the first loss I had witnessed in more than 8 years. So
are you okay?
It was disappointing. I didn't really know how to react to it. It was jarring. But so, you know, we mourn the loss of the streak, but, you know, I would say that atmosphere deserved to see the home team win, and, you know, the Yankees still won the series, so I can't be all that mad. And, I'm excited when they come back in July to see what it's like, because at that point, you know, a lot of the season will have taken shape, and I'm interested to see what happens. I would love to see the Orioles go out and get some starting pitching and shore up that rotation and really try to make a run at contending. I think they're still probably a year off.
I'm not even mad because the atmosphere was good with some incredible coping. If this was just like a 5-minute monologue to like help yourself feel better, I totally respect that.
Whipple, I just because I'm not as used to watching the Yankees lose in person as you are doesn't mean I am equally bad at dealing with it.
When you say go into enemy territory, like, I'm like, I have PTSD from enemy territory. I want to feel like I'm at home at Camden Yards because I can't face my Fenway Park demons.
Yeah, I think we will feel like we're at home in July, but it was just like, for much of last year, going to games at Camden Yards felt like a bunch of people went to a bar, and also there was like a baseball game on TV. Like, people went as a social event, basically, and that's like a great thing to do. Camden Yards is awesome for that. There's great food. There's great standing room areas. There's great, like, places to congregate. All of that. It's awesome. But, like, I've never gone to Yankee Stadium, even when the Yankees, like, weren't all that good, and felt like people were going as a social event and that the game was secondary. And this was the first time, at least in recent history, that I've been to Camden Yards and felt like the game was the primary event. And, like, that was cool. I feel like that's how attending a baseball game should be. And I'm glad that the Orioles have done enough to make their fans feel like that's what's going on.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I've been to 2 Yankees Orioles games at Camden Yards, both last April and May. And it's like you said, yeah, I mean, the game we went to that felt like, you know, people just needed something to do on a Wednesday night. So I hope in July, like, when, you know, I'm hopefully able to go and we can both be there, it feels like that, because that place is so nice and it does deserve that. I 100% agree with what you're saying. I feel like the problem with the Orioles is they're being run like the Astros right now, and former Astros executive. The problem with that strategy is you have to hit almost every, you know, the every possible prospect for, you know, that strategy of not really supplementing from outside, you know, using finances for that to work. And it's really a strategy by, you know, an owner who wants to save money and thinks it's able to be recreated. But you have to go and pay for people or trade for people. Like, the Astros is probably the most outlier positive example of tanking and rebuilding from within that we've seen. I mean, you know, even that team had to go trade for Justin Verlander. Like, I hope the Orioles can do that or in a position to do that and actually make that decision to do that, because they've kind of were there and then didn't do it last year, and that kind of sucks. Like, I don't really want to see that fan base and that team get caught in the loop of, you know, tanking teams that can't get to that next level. I mean, I do for the Yankees' sake, but yeah, like I think both of us have very positive feelings about our time at Camden Yards and the Orioles. And I've just hearing you talk about it, like I'd be excited to go see that. So yeah, I think of all the teams in this division, that's the one where, you know, I want them to succeed at a moderate level versus the other three teams where, you know, the Comets are bad to, you know, clowns to, you know, I don't know, the Blue Jays, whatever the hell the Blue Jays are doing. Somehow, the fact that they won that game today, I just, come on, Angels.
Came back from 6-0, then blew a 10-6 lead.
Your comment was so right. Yeah. Only the Blue Jays and Angels could play that game. But
yeah, that game could only take place between the Blue Jays and Angels. I believe that wholeheartedly. So Whipple, now that we're talking a little bit more about the league as a whole, I'm interested in if you can answer some questions for me. Like, for example, if you had to guess, who would you guess which pitching staff has accrued the most Fangraphs WAR in Major League Baseball?
Is it the Yankees?
It would be the New York Yankees. If you had to guess, which pitching staff would you think has posted the highest strikeouts per nine in Major League Baseball to this point?
The Yankees?
Ah, you know what? It's the Yankees again. If you had to guess, and in this case, you do have to guess, so I'm going to stop introducing it that way. Which team would you suspect has posted the best FIP thus far this year? Qualifier, you have to have played teams that are actually trying to win.
Mayhaps the Yankees.
It is indeed the New York Yankees, and they're only 0.03 off of the Rays, who have a 2.88 FIP, even though they haven't, you know, played anyone good. The Yankees have just been really good, man. And do you know what the most encouraging thing about the way the Yankees have pitched is to me?
That they're missing half the rotation.
Okay, well, maybe it's actually that.
The way
the second most encouraging thing to me about the way the Yankees are pitching is?
I do not.
It's that they've allowed a 306 BABIP. So that's the 12th highest in baseball, which means that, like, when guys are making contact, they are getting hits, and yet the Yankees are really effective at stranding guys on base. I believe they have the highest left-on-base percentage, the fourth highest left-on-base percentage of any staff in baseball, and they're timing their strikeouts well. You know, allowing that BABIP suggests that, like, you know, if the Yankees were like the Marlins and were allowing a 244 BABIP, I would be concerned about regression, but I'm not. Like, if anything, the BABIP is an indicator that things should get better. Yeah, their home run per fly ball is probably also going to go up. It's fifth or sixth lowest in baseball right now, but the Yankees pitching staff has given us a lot to be excited about. As have the Yankees bats. The Yankees have scored, excuse me, the Yankees have outscored their opponents by, I believe, 19 runs to this point this year. Pretty strong run differential, given that they've only played 9 games, so outscoring your opponents by more than 2 runs on average is pretty darn good. They have 2 players who have posted a WRC plus over 200 to this, or rather, 3 players. I will not let the plate appearance minimum erase the contributions that Franchi Cordero has made. And then Giancarlo Stanton, Anthony Rizzo, DJ LeMahieu have all been above average hitters. Oswaldo Cabrera has been kind of high variance. He's had some phenomenal games. He's shown flashes of exactly why we love Oswaldo Cabrera. Anthony Volpe, you know, maybe he's on the up and up. I think, you know, we just got to give him some time. He got his first major league extra base hit. I feel like I'm seeing everything I need to see from this lineup, whether it's in the underlying data or the performance. And you know what? They're putting it together and they're winning games. If you're going to score basically like 5 runs a game, as the Yankees have to this point, I dare say you're going to win pretty often.
Yeah, that like goes to what I said, where, you know, all these guys, nobody's really having a terrible start to the year. But I mean, just like up and down this lineup, this pitching staff, like there's so many positive performances to talk about. One guy you mentioned, you know, not one of the guys who has won the 200 WRC plus seasons, but I've just been really impressed with DJ LeMahieu so far. I think honestly,
absolutely,
for as long as we've done this podcast, and I feel like the biggest lesson of like the Yankees Files era of the Yankees is like when DJ LeMahieu and Gleyber Torres are going well, the Yankees are going well. And when DJ LeMahieu and Gleyber Torres are not going well, the Yankees are not going well. And it's because they're that middle of
true.
Yeah, they're like that the middle of the lineup, not like actual middle of the lineup for all cases, but like
quality middle.
Yeah, they're not the Judge and Stanton, but they're not the bottom of the lineup. They're going to take the Yankees from a good lineup to a great one. For DJ LeMahieu though, like another guy who, although the final numbers were a little tougher to defend, had a really good first 4 months last year. And then,
I mean, pre-injury, DJ LeMahieu was really good. That's right. You can give him that.
Right. Like, he was incredible. I mean, his on-base percentage was one of the best in the league. And something that's really stuck out to me this year is DJ LeMahieu striking out, actually, because DJ LeMahieu has struck out over 30% of the time, which is so far and away what he has done in his career. But DJ LeMahieu is also in the 99th percentile of hard hit percentage right now. And
awesome.
When I'm watching him, I'm really like, he's selling out for power and it's working. I mean, it's absolutely working. DJ LeMahieu will get his singles, but it's the, you know, it's the extra base hits that he completely lost the ability to get to last year. His final 2022 on-base percent, or sorry, hard hit percentage, he was 57th percentile. In 2021, down year for him, he was 68th. But now he's hitting the ball at more of a 2019 level in terms of hard hit percentage. Like, DJ LeMahieu is becoming a fundamentally different hitter, but yet also doing the same things that he did when he was, you know, back when he was like MVP DJ LeMahieu in the 2019 Yankees. And it's working really well. And if that's the key to success for him, if he's able to do that, like, that is awesome. That is one of the best possible outcomes for the Yankees, because that was just such a big question. Was he going to be able to rebound from not having surgery? I mean, I said on this podcast, like, I was not optimistic about him even playing opening day. For him to be in the lineup, to be hitting the ball harder than pretty much everyone else in the league, and clearly changing his offensive strategy to great success, having almost a 500 slugging percentage so far, like, that's pretty cool. I just love seeing this stuff play out in real time and getting to watch a guy make a change that we know and we have said is going to lead to success, and then him actually having success. I feel like that's the biggest story for me, because like, I know the other guys can be and will be good. I mean, DJ LeMahieu, it was a question if he was going to play. So like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Every time that DJ LeMahieu has slugged 485 or higher, 485 is his current slugging percentage, in a full season, he's been at least a 130 WRC plus hitter. So you got to be excited
right.
about that.
He's striking out and hitting home runs. I'm like, he's now like a Will Harris player. I was like, the three strikeouts on opening day, I'm like, this is either going to go really poorly, or I can see like where this is going. And it went the good way.
And it's going awesome. So Whipple, I'm going to throw some over-unders at you. I'm going to give you a stat that a guy is currently posting, and I'm going to ask you if you expect that at the end of the season, he will be over or under that number. And I think the first one is really compelling. Right now, Giancarlo Stanton has a 149 WRC+. For reference, for his career, Giancarlo Stanton has a 140 WRC+. Giancarlo Stanton, full season, over or under a 149 WRC+.
I feel like under, but also not that much under. I mean, in 20, you know, for his career, 140 WRC plus, 2021 level, not that far off. I mean, I feel like he is very capable of getting back to at least 2021 levels. And so I feel like that's probably somewhere between, you know, he's probably somewhere between 2021 in full in his career. So like, yeah, but like, it's going to be pretty close, I think. And you could make the argument, like, if there's anyone, I'm not counting out Giancarlo Stanton is what I'm saying. Like, I'm not going to say I don't believe he's going to do something, because if Giancarlo Stanton has told us one thing, it's that he can usually do the things that other people can't do. So I'm going to say a very skeptical under, but like only in the slightest sense.
Okay. I'm fine with that. Aaron Judge is currently walking 12.8% of the time. Last year, he walked 15.9% of the time. In 2021, he walked 11.8% of the time. Over under 12.8% walk rate for Aaron Judge.
I'm going to say over, because I feel like it'll probably be closer to last year's. But then again, last year came, he probably was increased. His walks were increased by being in a depleted lineup at some points, and I feel like this lineup's going to be better.
I'm thinking the same.
Yeah, so I'd say like slightly over, but I feel like I could just see it sticking around there.
Yeah,
it's hard to tell, because like last year's lineup was really good and then also really bad, and I forget when he was getting the walks. I'm just assuming that they came at the end.
I think slightly over, but not as high as last year, is probably what it ends up being. Aaron Judge, since last July 30th, or from last July 30th to the end of the season, walked 23.5% of the time, which is unbelievable. It's also basically what Gleyber Torres is doing right now, which, by the way, is pretty good. Here's one I like, because I'm interested in how you're viewing the shift rules. Anthony Rizzo, in his career, the highest full season batting average that he ever posted was .293. That was in 2019 with the Cubs. He hit .283 in 2018. He hit .292 in 2016. He hit .286 in 2014. Anthony Rizzo is currently hitting .286. Over or under .286 for Anthony Rizzo when the season ends?
I mean, I feel like that I would say under. I just feel like the shift is not going to help as much as people think it is. And like, as a
just wanted to bait you into doing that.
Yeah, I've never said that the shift is going to change. I think we've been in agreement on that part. But even yesterday, like his stats up until yesterday, he was hitting .250 and then he got two hits. So like, it's not, you know, at this point, the difference between, you know, a low average and a high average isn't that much. It's just funny because every time, I think the one or two times he's gotten a hit that would have been the shift, it's like they're just always going to point it out on the broadcast, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, for the rest of his career. Okay. It's just, that's annoying to me, because I'm like, it's going to reinforce confirmation biases that people have, and I'm just going to try to ignore it. I just don't think Anthony Rizzo is going to be hitting at that level in this point in his career. But like, maybe it'll help marginally, but I feel like even in the .250s or .260s, I mean, that would be better than he's done recently.
Yeah, I expect him to be basically a .250 hitter. This is one that I love, because it was one of my maybe not so bold predictions, and I think that somehow, even after the last, like, you know, 250 plus innings that this guy has pitched, people don't understand it. From 2021 to 2022, Nestor Cortes had a 2.61 ERA. This year, Nestor Cortes has a 2.61 ERA. Over under for the season, a 2.61 ERA for Nestor Cortes.
Yeah, I'm going under. Like, I mean, it was your bold prediction that I was most on board with. There's just nothing to show that he's going to slow down. I mean, like, I don't even think there's any explanation needed. Like, he is that good.
He's just really good.
92, and it's like people can't hit it. Like, he's figured it out, and if he needs to figure it out or change, like, I have inherent faith in this Yankee staff to keep helping Nestor Cortez succeed at whatever level he's at, which is a pretty good level.
Absolutely. Two more. First, despite his effectiveness in his last few games, there's been a lot of discussion about Mike King's velocity. It's down year over year. Obviously, we know he had the elbow thing that kept him out for the second half of last year. In his last two appearances, he's pitched 3 1/3 scoreless innings. So, like, with 4 strikeouts, I'm not all that worried about him. Michael King's current average four-seam fastball velocity is 94 miles an hour, over or under for the rest of the season.
Over, because he's in a dead arm period. I mean, like, the guy had, you know, he fractured his elbows coming back from that. Like, it's very clear what's going on here. He's still finding ways to be effective, but there's no injury. He's going to get better. It's a dead arm period. And, you know, I think people should just calm down. Like, yeah. Mike King is awesome, and he did not forget how to pitch.
Mike King is
awesome. We saw it yesterday.
He's going to be fine. Last one. Ian Hamilton, I think, has been a revelation. I think Ian Hamilton's so cool. It was such a pleasure to watch him pitch at Camden Yards on Friday. I love that he throws the Slombio and that it's the coolest pitch in baseball, as far as I'm concerned, at least the coolest named pitch in baseball. For the rest of the season, over under 0.5 pitches thrown by major leaguers that I think are as cool as the Slombio.
Under.
That's the easiest one. It's a definite
hard
under.
All right, wait. I got an over under of my own here, because
okay,
we did a Gleyber Torres segment, but again, we're nothing if a pod not built on narratives, and Gleyber Torres is, you know, your narrative guy. Gerrit Cole's my narrative guy. Gerrit Cole leading the league in WAR, leading the league in strikeouts, leading the league in wins.
Yep.
Should have a 0 ERA if he didn't get a Mickey Mouse run charged from a pitch clock violation. Gerrit Cole has a 13.9 strikeouts per 9 innings right now, which would be a career high for him, slightly topping 2019 in Houston, where he had a 13.8 strikeout per 9 rate. Do you think it's over under that strikeout rate?
Oh, man.
Strikeout per 9.
So he's 13.86 right now. He was 13.82 in Houston that year. And for his career as a Yankee so far, it's 11.81. So I basically think that 2021 was, like, pretty much peak Cole. Like, I don't know how much better we would reasonably expect him to be, but I do want to believe there's something there. I'm going to say it's under 13.9, but it's the highest full season mark he's posted as a Yankee. Like, if you had put it at 12.2, I think I would have taken the over. Like, I think he's going to have his best season as a Yankee, but 13 strikeouts per 9, 14 strikeouts per 9 is an insane mark to reach, especially when you're going to put in the volume that Gerrit Cole is going to put in, and you're going to have to grind in some starts. And, like, let's face it, the 2019 Astros were engaged in all kinds of illicit activities, and we don't know that they extended to the pitching staff yet, but we can't be certain they didn't. And that division was so weak. He's going to be just facing better lineups.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. I also think it's 212 innings, 326 strikeouts. So if he comes anywhere close to that in similar innings, I mean, he's going to blow his old strikeout record for the Yankees away. So
yes,
I mean, I think that's almost guaranteed to happen. Like, I just think we're gearing up for a big Gerrit Cole year. It seemed like that from day one of spring training, and he's just been in complete command. You know, he has the home, you know, we'll see. It's only 2 starts, but it just seems like he has addressed the home run issues. And I mean, I say that, and the Guardians will probably hit more home runs than they've ever had in their life.
Yeah, Stephen Kwan will go yard against him.
But I just love what I'm seeing from him. I mean, we talked about it after opening day, but it was more the same against the Phillies. And he's just it's just been a consistent, dominant tone since the beginning of spring training. Like, I think he's ready to go out and shove this year, and all the metrics, all his performance. I mean, he could cut down on his walks a little bit, but I'd rather him walk a few too many guys than give up a few too many home runs. So we'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic that Cy Cole is going to happen.
So Whipple, before we wrap up here, I just want to spend a few minutes on what I think is one of the worst. I don't want to say it's one of the worst articles in the history of The Athletic, but it is one of the articles with the worst content in the history of The Athletic. I'm not mad at The Athletic for reporting this. I'm mad at Rob Manfred for being an idiot. So Rob Manfred claims, and we know Rob Manfred is a liar, so let's get that out there. Rob Manfred claims that he got a phone call from, quote, one of our more senior owners, and that owner began talking about the number of employees who work on analytics. And that owner is alleged to have said, quote, you know, I don't know what this analytics thing is, but I have like 75 guys. What I want to do is I would spend a week in the analytics department. I was going to figure out what the hell these guys do. So first, we have some lies to unpack. I don't know if Rob Manfred ever got this phone call, first of all. Second of all, no team employs a small enterprise worth of guys to do analytics. 75 would blow away the analytics and probably analytics and scouting staffs of every team in baseball. So, like, that's a lie on its face. Third, no matter how many employees this guy has for analytics, if he exists, he better know what they do. Like, why does this owner have any employees whose jobs he doesn't understand? That's stupid. So anyway, Rob Manfred says, so how does it go? And the owner is alleged to have said, well, you know, I got a lot of smart guys down there, but I'm absolutely convinced that analytics is an arms race to nowhere. Then Manfred goes on to say, the competitive advantage piece. I think there was a point in time where if your analytics department was more developed than somebody else's, maybe you got that little edge. Right now, everybody's playing the same game. Once everybody's doing it, that little margin that maybe you're getting, I'm sure that whatever that margin was at one point in time, whatever it is today, it sure as heck is not worth the damage that was done to the game over a period of time. So Rob Manfred needs to do a few things. First of all, he needs to stop lying. Second of all, if he's going to make these claims, he needs to do at least two things. First, he needs to define what he means by analytics, because he says that everyone is playing the same game, which isn't true. He's saying that fact, or that thing that he claims is a fact, is a result of analytics, which he needs to define, because all analytics means is getting information from data. Analytics is not a monolith, and everyone who wants to smear things about baseball that they don't like as being results of analytics loves to say analytics and then not define it. And then finally, Manfred says that you can't get an advantage from knowing the data better than other teams, which is obviously false, and that it's done damage to the game, this interest in data. So I need Manfred to define analytics. I need him to prove that every team is doing the same thing. I need him to substantiate the claim that you can no longer get an advantage by knowing the data well. And I need him to tell me what specific damage to the game this analytics that he still hasn't defined has done. This is some of the most absurd. These are some of the most absurd claims I have ever heard. Manfred continues to be an idiot who hates the sport. He either made up this story or the owner made up this story or they conspired to do so together. Neither of them seems able to or interested in defining analytics. This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever read. It once again proves that the last thing Rob Manfred is fit to do is be the commissioner of baseball.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb. I mean, like, I think the biggest idiotic thing is, yeah, like, analytics is a word that does not mean how to get better in baseball. And also, what he's essentially saying is that teams trying to get better is bad because, like, they're not going to get once everybody is trying to get better, you don't get the same amount of margin. Well, no, because it's just all it is you find the competitive advantages elsewhere. I mean, like, it's not like,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's so dumb to even try to explain why it's bad that, like, it's just a, you know, it's just a dumb thing that a dumb person said. And I don't know what damage is done to the game at a period of time. It's not because of people trying to, like, it's because people, their job is to try to win, and they did the correct thing to pursue that end. And unfortunately, it cost the owners and him money, and he's now complaining about it. Like, it's just a bad faith argument made for all the wrong reasons, and he sounds dumb. Like, if I was Rob Manfred, who I would assume has some level of intelligence, like, you got to know that saying this makes you sound like an idiot. Like, I don't understand what your comments are going to get reported, and you're going to get clowned on in the media. You obviously don't care, but, like, I don't know.
I think we know better at this point than to assume that Rob Manfred would refrain from saying something for fear of sounding like an idiot.
That's true.
I don't think he has a good enough grasp on what makes someone sound like an idiot.
He did have the press conference right after they canceled a week of games, like, announcing, like, he had just, you know, I don't know, created a new baseball team. Like, that was the weirdest thing. He was, like, taking, like, applause or something, like, and smiling.
Yeah.
I'm like, this guy is so freaking tone deaf. He's an idiot. But, yeah, I mean, you have the Rob Manfred sucks beat, and I will just voice my applause at your comments, not his.
Rob Manfred is out here blaming something he can't or won't define for doing, quote, damage to the game over a period of time. Maybe not punishing a team that is revealed to have been running an egregious sign-stealing scandal that won them no fewer than two pennants in a World Series does damage to the game. Maybe messing with the baseball in a poor attempt to produce the kind of batted ball distribution for which you have an aesthetic preference and then lying about it does something to the game. Maybe completely changing the rules of baseball once you get to the 10th inning, because if there's anything baseball fans hate watching, it's more baseball, does damage to the game. Like, he's a tone-deaf idiot. I couldn't put it better. With that, let's get back to the positive part of this podcast. Whipple, the Yankees are playing really well. They are headed to Cleveland for a few games at what was once the Jake before coming back to the Bronx to face our old friends, the Minnesota Twins, for four games, who unfortunately no longer feature Gary Sanchez. So it's a full week of games, no off days until Monday the 17th, three at Cleveland, four at the stadium against Minnesota. Unfortunately, it looks like we have arrived at the first series that will feature both Domingo Germán and Clark Schmidt as starting pitchers, but it was inevitable for this time in the season. Your confidence out of 10 in the 6-3 New York Yankees?
Got to go up to 9.5. I mean, this team has done everything that they've needed to. They've done it with ease. They've done it against good teams. They've done it with pitching. They've done it with hitting. I mean, we could have another hour of this podcast talking about Giancarlo Stanton's start and Johnny Brito's emergence and, you know, the fact that Wandy Peralta is continuing to be a guy and Clay Holmes is looking like his old self. Like, and Aaron Judge is still out here, you know, on pace to hit more home runs they did last year. Like, it's all the small early season stuff, but also, like, we've seen enough baseball to know that starting off strong is not a guarantee. And this team just, I think the big message for this year is just, like, get stuff done. Like, we've seen how good they can be. Like, I think with last year, we saw how well a team can start. And we know that, like, that doesn't really matter if you can't sustain it. So just keep winning series, keep, you know, play sustainably good baseball. Even though some guys are getting injured, you're going to get some guys back and nothing is, like, bad enough to be super concerned. I think just very positive vibes. I mean, even with Anthony Volpe, like, hasn't, you know, gotten off to the best start in the last week, but had a huge triple in Saturday night's game. And, you know, you can tell he's going to figure it out. He's taking those kinds of at-bats. So, like, even the bad things are good. I feel like that's when you know a team is really good. And this team, if you haven't learned anything from us in the last hour over the last 70 episodes, they're pretty good.
They're pretty good. I can't go up to 9.5 just because it would be disrespectful to my favorite pitcher, Jonathan Loáisiga. I'm not going to increase my rating while he's on the injured list, but that means we're only about 2 weeks out from me being able to. Although Josh Donaldson going on the IL maybe should bump me up, but I'm going to stick at a 9. I love what I'm seeing from this team. I'm excited to see them go play on the road against a 2022 playoff team. You know, the Guardians ought to be good. They, you know, made some strategic acquisitions. I like them getting Mike Zunino. I like them getting Josh Bell. I like that they had to use their bullpen up in an extra inning game today. Hopefully the Yankees can get to Bieber early and really prolong that struggle for Cleveland. I'm gonna stick at a 9 for now, and I'm gonna hope that this team does what it tends to do and beats up on the AL Central here in this coming week. Whipple, any parting shots from you before we wrap up here?
My one parting shot is just cue the clip of Joe Biden yelling Minnesota, and that's the vibes for this week.
Absolutely. And my parting shot is going to be to congratulate the now 5-time men's basketball national champion UConn Huskies. They capped off one of the most dominant tournament runs that we've seen in the 64/68 team era on Monday with a 76-59 victory over San Diego State. Really just an incredible team. Jordan Hawkins has announced he's going to the NBA. It's very well deserved. Donovan Klingon is coming back, which means UConn is going to be very well equipped to make another run next year. We grew up without professional sports in the state, obviously, and UConn basketball was a huge thing. So to see them, get through the turmoil of conference realignment and their time in the AAC and joining the new Big East, and then, you know, reestablishing themselves as the pinnacle of college basketball, that was great. And, there's no better way to kick off the spring than with a UConn national championship.
I don't know about no professional sports, but I grew up going to Whalers games with with Mark Greenstein. So okay,
he's gonna bring him back. I know he's gonna do it. All right, people can keep up with all of our written content at yankeesfiles.com. Can keep up with us on Twitter, where we're at Yankees Files. And finally, you can get this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We hope you'll rate, review, and subscribe if you like it. Don't review or rate if you don't like it. Just subscribe, listen to the podcast, play it on silent, whatever you do, it helps us out. Or just like talk about it. There'll be a buzz. Any publicity is good publicity. We'll take what we can get. At Yankees Files on Twitter, podcast wherever you get your podcasts, yankeesfiles.com. Yankees are about to play 7 games against the Guardians and Twins. We'll be back next weekend to recap them. And until then, let's go Yankees.